Welcome to another edition of Business Way Outside the Box, sponsored by PR Works. I'm your host, Steve Dubin, and our firm, PR Works, a lightly used PR firm based in Plymouth, Mass, with clients across the U.S. and Canada. We specialize in businesses that are way outside the box, and we encourage you, the listener and the watcher, to let us know if you know of businesses that are way outside the box that we should consider for future guests. We look forward to hearing from you, and you can visit our website at prworkzone.com. Today, we have with us two business coaches who have been doing this for a while from Maximum Value Partners, MVP. We have with us Adam Sunhalter and Jack Mancini. They met as caddies. Anyone who has, or Adam met Jack as a caddy. Anyone who has earned their salt or come up the hard way, as I have as well, has served as a caddy. It's a good training ground in humility and human relations. And it comes with strap burns. And so a little bit of background. Jack is a survivor of corporate America, has started, turned around and sold off numerous businesses. And Adam comes from a Wall Street financial and banking background. Both of them had a strong desire to take those skills and help the guys on the front line, small business people, run more profitable, more successful, and more harmonious businesses. And with that, welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks, glad Steve, to be here.
Thank you. Well, why don't we go right to it? You guys have been in partnership for 2 decades, approximately.
That's right.
And a lot of your businesses are about various family business and partnerships. What are some of your, you know, your initial advice about working, playing nicely with others, being a good partner, being a good advocate for one another?
Well, there are a lot of characteristics about that. You know, first of all, you got to like the guy. So that was hard to do with Adam for first 10 years.
You got to understand, so Jack and I went to opposing high school. So it starts from there in terms of just, you know, okay, the opposite camp. But yeah, there's more to it. Go ahead, Jack.
No, there's certain characteristics that you can almost peg for having to be in place for success. You know, you have to choose your battles right. You have to not nitpick. That's to me one of the biggest things. If somebody's always speaking their mind and don't like where the fork's placed on the table or whatever it is, that's doomed. You know, you got to tolerate each other. That isn't negative sounding. It's reality. We surprisingly have never argued. Argue being raising voices, getting mad at each other. We get along. We like each other. We're both good people. We share the same values. Those are a lot of things. I got more, but basically they're the building blocks for a successful partnership. And that could be marriage. It could certainly be business, which is what we're talking about. So that's something about partnerships.
And Adam, your take on that?
Yeah, he always hit some good points there. He mentions like this whole idea of nitpicking on stuff. And it's usually those little things. We've all heard the stories of friends that got divorced over the spouse putting the toilet paper the wrong way, right? And you're going, wait a minute, how is that possible? But it's usually a bunch of little things that kind of go. And, you know, Jack and I have been together for almost 20 years. We both also have partners in life. You know, we've been married. I've been married going on 24 years, and Jack and his wife just celebrated 52 years. And you kind of learn to pick your battles, so to speak, or you learn that, hey, things are a certain way, and you have to figure out what are you willing to live with, right, in terms of what's going to bother you. So if things bother you a lot, you have to kind of either hash it out pretty early, or this may not be the right partner for you. And One of the ways that you can figure those things out, we found, is if you travel together. If you travel together, a lot of things come out, in terms of just how, how do you do if you're going in and out of the airport? How do you treat people? You're in a new place. Maybe you're not sure where you're going. Just you learn a lot about each other as part of that. So, we had clients years ago that had some issues going on. They weren't really talking very well, and we were excited that they had to go get a piece of equipment that they had to drive from Cleveland area to Minneapolis. That's about a 12-hour drive each way. So we said, hey, these folks are going to have 24 hours in a vehicle. You could solve most of the world's problems in 24 hours, Steve, couldn't you? Well, unfortunately, these two partners didn't really talk about really anything on the 24-hour drive. I mean, they had some, I would say non-meaningful discussions about stuff. So how could the two of you go for 24 hours and not solve some of these issues that you guys have? Again, you're locked in the vehicle. Let's hash it out. And within a year, they had broken apart. And so
We were astounded. We just took a ride. We decided to drive for a little seminar, one of guys who we follow. So we drove from Cleveland to Charlotte. We decided to drive. We just drove to Charlotte, and it was terrific. I mean, we were able to air a whole lot of things that we never quite have time to sit down and do, and just being able to do that, it was nice. I enjoyed it. I find I like driving now. I don't like driving. I like being driven. How about that?
Driving
Me
Mr.
too.
Jack, right?
Yeah,
I could use
Adam
Adam to
could
give
do
me a ride
that.
at night myself these days.
Happy to do it, right?
But what if you run into you're coaching a client that they are having problems, and you do have nitpicking, and maybe they have different personalities. What do you do to sort of move, break up that scar tissue or that impasse?
We have an advantage here with our ages. I can say things and get away with them from, just about anybody. It really makes no difference. It could be someone older, younger, gender doesn't make any difference. And they will take it, they will listen, they won't say, get the hell out of here. Because we see it. We see it so easily. And for us, we've been through this many times, talking about the problems. You can just see it. You see it when they're looking at each other or not looking at each other and answering a question. We don't tolerate it isn't quite the right word, but we just don't let it go because it's detrimental to their relationship. It really is, and getting things done for the company. And when in doubt, we always say that we do what's best for the organization, and that's how we'll coach and preach, if you will.
So the U.S. Bureau of Census says that about 90% of businesses in the U.S. are small family businesses. And you guys do a lot of work with both married couples and family businesses in general. And what are some of the ground rules that you help set up that make that work? Because obviously it's hard to work with folks because you're on so many different both work and emotional levels.
If I could use one word to answer, I would use the word respect. Okay, and respect in a couple different areas. One is respect your differences. So it's one of the first things we do with all of our clients is we take them through a behavior assessment called DISC, which many of your listeners might be familiar with. It looks like you are as well, Steve. We all have different styles naturally, and as part of that, we have natural strengths and weaknesses. And when it comes to partners, if you have two folks are exactly the same, it can create some issues. The whole idea of familiarity breeds contempt. Whereas those opposing styles, well, once you get past the initial kind of awkwardness in terms of just the way that you each might approach things a little differently, you start to realize that, hey, having those differences are fantastic because together we can accomplish great things because we can each play to our strengths. And so, kind of what Jack was talking about is, he and I, coach all of our clients together, and sometimes they want to get Jack's opinion, versus getting my opinion, just in terms of different ways to kind of look at stuff. But having that respect to start with, in terms of, look, we each have our own strengths and our own idiosyncrasies, and so just respect those to kind of start with is often a big thing to make sure people are just aware of that. And that includes things like taking care of issues in private. So we had a client years ago. It was a husband and wife team. It was a second marriage for both of them. And they would have literally shout at the top of their lungs, veins bulging in their foreheads in the office about stuff that had nothing to do with work at all, had to do with something that happened at home, right? But there were people in the other offices on the, down the floor. Again, this is, in a big office building that would complain about them. But, hey, we can tell that so-and-so is in the building today because they're busy yelling at each other and thinking, wait a minute. If you have problems, take those things in private and, and get them solved. Because if you as the owners and if you have partners, if you're going at each other, well, the employees, the rest of your team are just like the kids, right? They kind of see what's going on and they'll play to each of you to what's kind of going on and they'll play off each other. You need to have that unified front. And if you don't have that unified front as partnerships, it becomes very difficult to be able to gain success long term.
Okay. And family businesses in general, I mean, part of the challenge is oftentimes you're trying to integrate people from your family into your business, and sometimes it's just not a good fit in the role they're playing and the responsibilities they're given. How do you tiptoe through that or not tiptoe through that dynamic to help them improve their business?
Go on, Adam.
I wanted to see Jack with tiptoeing. That's a good visual of Jack tiptoeing versus kind of coming in, right? And kind of talking about stuff. One of the things that we talk about, and I grew up with a family business, Steve. So my parents worked together for 40 years, and they've been married for over 50 years. And I thought it was normal. I thought it was normal to have it, and I didn't realize until I got out into the real world just how unusual my parents are from that standpoint of not only being able to have a successful marriage, but having a successful business and getting along. And a big part of what they did is they had different rules in terms of what was going on. And so, during the day, my dad was in charge of, the sales and a lot of the client things, and my mom took care of a lot more of the back end stuff. And so, when it came to kind of who was in charge, who was the boss during the day, it was pretty clear that my dad was the boss. Now, when it comes to the personal side, though, my dad's now 74, 73. He gets an allowance still. He's been getting an allowance for decades, and so it's very clear who's in. He does whatever she tells him to do to a certain extent. So it's keeping those things separate to a certain extent, but also to have it to look. My mom was very good about, look, we're not going to talk business at home. It would happen at times, but it would be, let's talk business for 20 minutes and then we're kind of done. Now, my dad's mind was always kind of going with thoughts. He'd keep it to himself. Again, knowing what kind of battles to kind of pick or kind of bring up. And so I think having a lot of those kind of ground rules, but when it comes to family too, one of the biggest challenges is we know each other's family. So whether it be, parent, child, or siblings or cousins, and it's amazing. We naturally go into those roles right away in terms of what's kind of going on. And so you have to leave that at the door when you come in and, leave that personal stuff there. So we come in and our roles in the company might be very different. Even though I'm the younger sibling, doesn't mean, I'm not in charge. Even though you're 20 years, older than me, I'm the one in charge now. So we have to kind of get used to that. And so having those discussions, so I don't know that we tiptoe, Jack, do we? We kind of take those things head on to make sure that we bring
Pretty
them up.
much, pretty much head on, because we don't like it and it's not productive. So, we aren't the typical client is always right kind of people. We again try to evaluate situations as we can be the nitpickers if we want to. We can do anything, and we do. We settle these things, and if they don't like facing up what they have to face up to, we'll break off. That rarely happens. We deal with our clients in a way that our relationships of non-coaching go for the longest is about 13 years, and it's multiple years always to get things done and to implement things, and they appreciate that because we tell them how it's done.
Okay, and so that brings me to, I've been told by a turnaround coach that there are standard characteristics for why a company is failing. Somebody is a talker, they're not a listener, they're not really a doer, they're a thinker, they don't really bring in outside resources to help them get some reflection. How do you determine, from the front end, whether you know, a client is a good fit, that they're coachable?
Well, we have a 7-part process that we coach through. And that 7-part process lets us evaluate, along with DISC, evaluate the person, how they initially to us talk about those 7 keys to success. And usually they fumble pretty quickly on the first item. Well, the first item is a vision. You know, where do they want to take the company? Many, many owners of small businesses don't do planning and look ahead and try to document where they're headed. You know, you wouldn't take a trip without having some sort of map. Most small businesses don't have those maps of any type. But where they really show to us, you know, plus or minus, if you will, we can go with these guys or not, or to what degree they handle the second item, which is a profit plan. Do you have any sense of being able to read financial statements, balance sheet, profit and loss, and incorporate that into some kind of plan, which a lot of people use the word budget. That's the universal term of, you know, planning. We hate that word. It's an old dusty accounting, and we both have accounting and financial backgrounds. It's an old dusty term. And we just don't like it. We refer to the what is called a budget in many places as a profit plan. Profit plans are exciting. After all, you're in the business to make profit. Let's try to get the words that convey that in a more exciting way. But in any event, they usually can't read the financial statements, and we'll make judgment on that. And then overall demeanor and sense of defensiveness. And you could add to that, Adam, you know, in terms of how we evaluate. We have a 14-point criteria that we give you a grade after we interview with you. And we tell you that right in front of you. Like, look, we're going to leave. You're going to leave. And we're going our separate ways. And we'll get back to you in a few days. We want to determine if you're coachable and if we want to coach you. And it sounds kind of cocky, but it's true. That's how we like to do it. Because we know if we start off with somebody who the chemistry isn't there and you know, the feelings with these people are not right, then we'll never succeed. So we don't even start.
And we made a mistake early on, Steve. We assumed everybody was coachable. Right. And you know, a couple of years in the business, we were looking and we had, you know, a bunch of clients doing really well, but we had some clients that weren't doing so well. We're looking internally at ourselves. Okay. How do we get better at, you know, making it more simple and communicating stuff? How do we adjust our process? And we kept looking internally, finally, so wait a minute. You know, it's not us. This is working well for these folks. It's really the folks we're dealing with that aren't coachable. So the 14-point criteria Jack talks about, it comes back to kind of a pass or fail kind of grade. And so not any one of those 14 points is going to tank you. But if you have 3 or 4 of them that aren't there, we just know, hey, it's not worth our kind of time to kind of start with you. You know, I think what often happens with the owners is it gets so overwhelming at times, you aren't sure what to focus on. And so what our 7 keys allow for is for us to have a discussion about the most important things in the business. And so as we're interviewing the potential client, we're asking them questions to see how they respond to stuff. So are they looking at these things? And as we had that discussion, we started kind of get a feel, because a big part of our coaching is we have to like the people that we're working with. You know, life's too short to be working with people that you really don't enjoy. And so we tell them that. But it comes down to, you know, having, you know, one of the biggest things is just curiosity. And we have a term we call old steel guys. You know, it doesn't matter how old or young you are, whether you're male or female, but you have that old steel guy mindset of, hey, I have it all figured out, right? I've seen it all, been there and done that. It's like, you know, you aren't telling that person anything, Steve, right? So you can try and you bang this and do that, and you can waste all kinds of days, weeks, months, and years trying to figure it out. But we learn that they aren't worthy, you know, or aren't worth the time and effort, because they aren't really going to change. And, you know, we saw that a lot early on in our coaching business, because, you know, part of Jack's background was doing turnarounds. And we realized, well, yeah, Jack's great at coming in and turning a company around if he's the guy in charge. But to coach somebody through a turnaround, well, usually if you're the one that got the company in trouble, usually you're the problem. And if you aren't willing to admit that and make some changes, well, nothing's going to get better, you know? And so we've often had a lot of luck with the next generation to help fix it, turn around, it's something, because they're open to trying new things and realizing that, hey, mom or dad doesn't have everything kind of figured out. Let's try some different things to see what's going to be happening. So that kind of curiosity. So if folks are out kind of looking for stuff and searching, that's always a big tip off for us that, hey, they're searching for the answers. And the question is, do they find the right places for those answers, or are they looking in the wrong places for those answers?
Okay, and so one of the things that I see from my end are especially very small businesses. The founder, the entrepreneur, sometimes has a stranglehold on their own business, that they have trouble trusting others to do anything competently. They have trouble deputizing any employees to take up any portion of the business, and they're concerned that no one will do it as well as they will. How do you get people past that point to that leap of faith?
Well, part of it starts with, as Jack was mentioning before, the vision in terms of, well, what are you trying to create here? Are you just trying to create, doing what you're doing, and are things fine? That's great. Versus, do you want to do things differently? And it can be very challenging. When you start a company, usually you're the one and you're doing everything. And chances are, if you were just doing that one thing, yeah, maybe you are the best at that. But you start to kind of get realizing what's going on. One of our great tricks that we'll do with folks is, hey, why don't you take the next week and either throw a piece of white paper or use your whiteboard, or just take a pen and paper, and just start writing down things that you do, every day, every week. And usually what happens is they have multiple pages of stuff. They said, I didn't realize I was doing 117 different things. It's like, okay, but you get out of paper and say, look, okay, well, here's how do we start to, get somebody else maybe involved in this? And usually we'll start with some small stuff. So you don't necessarily start with the biggest thing. So usually one of the biggest things people don't want to give up is the checkbook, right? Or the financial, control of signing checks. Okay, so I want to keep, okay, so we don't necessarily start there. Let's start with something that's a little easier. And as you look at that list of 117 things, I got to believe there's at least 10 things on there that you really don't like to do and you probably aren't good at. So how do we get those, to somebody else? So usually we kind of start there to get those easy wins. And once you get that, all of a sudden they start to realize, hey, well, gee, maybe I can do more with this or more with that. So it starts, with those baby steps to get that momentum started.
Jack, anything to add to that? I mean, when I think of this subject, I think of Berger's E-Myth books that, in his initial book, he talks about someone who loved to make pies made terrific pies, but fairly quickly they had too many orders for pies, and the woman was overwhelmed and needed to teach someone else to make pies and build an organization or die.
Well, the big thing that so many small business owners don't understand is the power of the organization. And Adam refers to the old steel guys, just grumpy guys with arms crossed in front of them who don't really understand business themselves, but they've concurred that, they're the ones who know it all and they're going to keep it to themselves. Okay, so the organization of people are the ones who get things done. And then I bring up the old steel guy because they would always say what very few times that they talk to their organization, they always would say that people are their most important asset. That's a lot of nonsense until lately in our economy and culture, we're truly acting as owners of small businesses. We're acting to include people into the organization and, help them on their careers, help them balance, play and work. And it's a whole different kind of manager today. So when you get the old guys, they basically are holding fast to things that you just know aren't going to really turn out well when they try to incorporate cooperation in a way that they would like, they being the workers. And it's a whole different environment now. And it's okay. I mean, I think there's a lot of good to it. There's some baggage that seems to be dragging along, but culturally those things get whacked. But a good company, successful company is going to have an organization that you can show literally on paper, draw the little boxes connecting to each other, and run it that way. It's very important. And it works from what we see. And when we can penetrate somebody like that, who objects to the new way, It makes a gigantic difference.
I agreed. We work with some franchise organizations, and you know, the business model is, here's what you do. The operations manual is, here's what you do. As soon as you open the, you know, turn the key in the door, here's what you need to do for the entire day. And most businesses have not mapped out their procedures like that. And so in many ways it's open to question. And if somebody's missing due to illness or vacation, there can be a bump in the road. And so that brings me to bumps in the road for you guys. Have you experienced setbacks yourselves and learned from them?
In terms of our partnership or in terms of life?
Well, I'm talking about really about business and being partners. Yes.
Let's ponder that for a minute.
I mean, one of the things you did mention is that you learned that sometimes you thought that you could bring anybody into the boat and they would be coachable. So that's certainly one. And I would assume there may have been others. For instance, here's a question to consider. When you talk to new prospects, they may say to you, are you an expert in my niche? Do you know my industry inside and out? How do you deal with that?
Well, we say if you're looking for a product or service expert, we aren't your guys. Yeah, you know, we may have some experience in your industry, but usually that's expertise you have as the owner, and usually there are other folks that have expertise. We're more on the business side for the marketing and sales and the administration parts that kind of encompass every type of business from that standpoint. So we have certain industries we spend more time with, but it's not because we're that much knowledgeable. We're more aware of the phrases, but with most companies, 95% of stuff's the same. They may use some different jargon here or there, but it's really the same stuff. And from an owner's standpoint, the things you have to work on, and we would challenge our clients early on, Steve, we'd say, look, the goal for you is to get your business to the point where Jack and I can run the business. And they would laugh because they go, well, you don't know squat about whatever, right? Whether it be, fixing the plumbing or fixing a car or writing some software. So that's fine. We could find people who have that expertise. Your job as the owner isn't to be the best at the product service. The best, your job is three words: plan, direct, and control. So we ask you, what's the plan? And if you ask an owner what the plan is, a small business owner, 90% aren't going to have one. They say, what do you mean? Like, what's the plan? Well, what's the plan for today? What's the plan for this week? What's the plan for this year? And they often can't express it. It's, well, it depends who gets the, whoever calls me by 10 a.m. this morning is setting my plans for the day, right? It's whatever fire I'm kind of putting out. And so we help them get around that and say, look, you got to step back from it. And, you mentioned, Gerber's book with the E-Myth, that phrase of working in versus working on the business, okay? That's where that comes from. And when we first read the book, we had people mention it and say, oh, you read E-Myth. And they'd be like, what do you mean? Like, okay, that has now become part of the lexicon of business. But the idea is in terms of, well, what do you do? It starts with the plan. So if we don't have a plan, it becomes very difficult to get everybody on the same page. But if you have a plan in place and you get people involved with it, we can then direct the activity. Part of your job is not to do everything, but to be able to direct what goes on. And having those good people, as Jack was saying, in place, having the organization there, you can kind of direct folks to get stuff done. And the control part comes through a series of regular meetings and reports to see what's happening, especially in today's day and age. It's never been easier to have a good sense of what's going on in your company without having to physically be there. We have all this technology that's here, and there's reports that are available, and there's ways to connect and stay in touch with folks. It's easier than ever. Again, I remember as a kid being out in San Diego for a week vacation. I was probably eight years old, and my dad, every morning, he'd be calling in, hey, what's going on? And, by 3 o'clock in the afternoon or 2 o'clock, make sure before everybody leaves, because 3 o'clock, calling again, just, see what was going on. But it helped him to make sure, hey, I want to make sure I can enjoy my vacation, and see what's happening. So, it's progressed over years. So as I look back and see, I can notice what my parents were doing right without me even kind of knowing about it. But as I become for a long time, being able to be tied in that way is very, very key from that standpoint.
Yeah, I would say, obviously, the tenor of business, the speed of business, the speed of society has changed significantly. And the pandemic has changed us significantly. And it's made us take another hard look at what we do and why we do it, and do we enjoy it? And sort of that leads me to sort of the the last question I have for you guys are, what do you see as sort of the future of the business, the future of your business, you know, even in the next 5 years, of how you work with people and how you help folks?
I think you have to be more tolerant, for sure, of the changing attitude towards work. And it's impossible to assess what's coming down the future with all the disruption in our form of government. You know, if it becomes more socialized and more government control, bigger government, it's going to certainly impede the job creation and the machine that's been the U.S. economy for hundreds of years. So it's tough to say where it's going to come out. It always is. Obviously, we can't predict the future, but, you know, some big tracks are going to be laid down, I feel, with what's going on in Europe now, and it's going to reflect over here. And jobs and the lifestyle that we've grown up with, you know, it's not going to be the same. It never is, but it could go either way right now. It's kind of an interesting time to be alive, so...
Okay, and Adam,
prognosis? Yeah, well, I was going to say, you know, one of the battles we've had for years with owners of small companies is, you know, people wanting some flexible workspace, right? In terms of, you know, being able to do stuff. And so the pandemic kind of forced that to happen, because the bosses always feel, hey, if I can't see you, Steve, how do I know that you're working, right? And we said, look, again, come back to your job isn't to micromanage people and be on top of them. You want to have good people, give them direction, and let them do their stuff. And so... I think as folks start to kind of embrace that, start to use that technology, you know, I've got some young kids that are teenagers now. They're the first generation that will not have to live and work in the same place, and it won't be unusual, right? You know, it was unusual until a couple of years ago, but now, so it started to kind of embrace that stuff, and so that opens the world to where all of a sudden you can now tap into folks worldwide. You have now, you know, potential 7+ billion people versus just the folks in your local, you know, market that you can kind of tap into. So as a small business owner, to me, it's never been more positive in terms of being able to add great stuff to your company from that standpoint.
All right. Well, so my final question really is, if people are to contact you to talk about a coaching engagement, what kind of criteria do you have for those folks? What are the kinds of people that you want to work with? Is it a size of company? Is it a frame of mind that they have? I'm assuming it's not a geography. So you tell me.
From a size standpoint, usually we'll talk about employee size, Steve, and usually it's between 1 to 25 employees is usually where we start. And so that's usually a company that's, you know, the owner will either often be stuck, where they're kind of bumping along. Maybe they've been at a similar level for the last 5 or 10 years. They can't quite find a way to kind of break through that. We often have clients that are going through some pretty fast growth. And, you know, that creates a lot of indigestion in terms of how do I take all this business in to be able to kind of serve the business. And the third area is often people going through some transitions. So, hey, we're trying to go from one generation to the next. And how do I know when the next generation is ready? And so those are three of the key areas that we often help folks through from that standpoint. And so they're often folks who are out going to seminars, they're maybe going to workshops, or they're reading books, or watching some YouTube stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, it's rare that you get that exact book or that exact video at the right time. And so to reach out and get some coaching to help from that standpoint is where folks will often kind of come to us. You know, we aren't the first call. It's usually, hey, I went to this, I read this, or I tried that, or I talked to a friend of mine. They've kind of dipped their toe in the water a little bit before they realize, hey, I need something a little more, I don't say intense, but, you know, more regular, more scheduled, as well as folks who have experience help to get me focused on what kind of needs to get done. But those are some areas that we often will help those folks through in terms of what they're often kind of struggling with to be able to kind of figure out when we come on board.
Okay. And anything to add to that, Jack? The personality type or the frame of mind that people come to you with?
Well, the frame of mind is they're going to submit, which is important to do. They've banged their head against so many things that I got to try this coaching stuff out. So I need help, and those are the best kind. I mean, who realize that. They do need help, and we'll be able to talk and be heard. You know, those are our biggest success stories. So that's, you know, that's what we strive for, to get the right criteria to take them on, you know, in a way that we feel will be successful with them.
I think one of your favorite phrases, Jack, is folks that appreciate that they don't know what they don't know.
That's, boy, is that right.
Right. I mean, that's what it comes down to in terms of mindsets. They realize that the further they get in this thing, well, yeah, they're learning a lot more, but they realize the more I learn, the more I realize that I don't really know. And I could use some help in that standpoint. So again, the folks that kind of come to that aha moment or light bulb that, hey, I really don't know what I don't know, and appreciate that.
All right. Well, this has been a great session. I've heard and learned a lot. I appreciate your insight and your comments. Tell us what's the best way to reach you to have a further conversation and a potential engagement.
Sure, then go check out our website, which is maximumvp.com. You can also check us out on LinkedIn if you search for Adam Sonhalter or Jack Mancini. What we failed to mention was also we have a podcast we have as well, Steve. We start out live on the radio, but it's been over 6 years now, over 300 episodes. It's called Dirty Secrets of Small Business. And we have a website that's called that way, dirtysecretsofsmallbusiness.com. But also, if you go to one of your favorite podcast players, you can search for Dirty Secrets of Small Business. And there's over 300 episodes that stand the test of time. It's their helpful hints for folks to kind of do stuff. If you listen to one of those podcasts, you'll get a pretty good sense for how Jack and I approach stuff and see if we can help answer those questions for you. But, you know, they can do that. And they can feel free to email us, too, at radio@maximumvp.com.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time. I look forward to potentially having you on in the near future. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having us on, Steve.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.